81, 4C. I know Harry read it. I want to read it again. For Zion must increase in beauty and in holiness. Her borders must be enlarged. Her stakes must be strengthened. Yea, verily I say unto you, Zion must arise and put on her beautiful garments. This evening is about faith. It directly relates to everything about Zion. But I have to admit, when I first came into the church, when I was first converted, everyone was talking about this Zion. I really didn't buy into it. It wasn't I didn't buy into it, I guess, so much as I said, well, all right, if it's going to happen, that sounds great. I've now bought into it a little bit more. I really like the idea. But you know, I think Zion and the concept of Zion acts for a lot of our people as a stumbling block to the bigger picture. I do not believe that Zion is the goal, but instead it is a magnificent byproduct of our real goal. It's a magnificent byproduct of having great faith. So, this evening's about faith. At least that's what I want it to be about. The best question I can think of to ask then is, how do we get great faith? It must be worth something. It must be worth having. Christ praised a few for having great faith. Let's see here. From Matthew chapter 15, verse 27. O woman, great is thy faith. Be it unto thee even as thou wilt. And her daughter was made whole from that very hour. That was a woman who was not an Israelite, was not a Jew. She came to Christ looking for a healing for her daughter. And Christ said, we don't feed the dogs with the table bread. And she said, but surely the dogs eat of the crumbs. And Christ knew that she believed that Christ had the ability to heal her daughter. And she had the faith that he would. And he did. And so he commended her for having such great faith. But how'd she get it? So really, I think before we figure out how to get great faith, we need to know what faith is. So first, what is faith? I found a nice little tidbit here in chapter 11 of Hebrews. Now faith is the assurance of things hoped for, the evidence of things not seen. I know when I first converted in, Joe Williams and Mike Morris, as they did cottage visits with me. That was one of the first to come up. And it's actually a very powerful statement. It explains why we do most anything that we do. The lectures on faith point out that it is our faith that moves us to action. When I get up in the morning throughout the week, I get ready, I have breakfast, I get in my truck and go to work. Probably won't tomorrow because that truck is not drivable. But I'll get in some vehicle and I'll go to work. And why? Because I have the faith that when I get there, I'm going to have a paying job that I can do so that I earn money to support my family. How about when you open the icebox? When you get in the icebox, do you expect to find food? Well, sure you do. If you didn't have the faith that there would be food in your icebox, you wouldn't open it. There'd be no purpose. You probably wouldn't even own an icebox. It just takes up space. Think about when you deposit money into a bank. I hear people talk about banks failing. If you didn't believe that the money would be there when you needed to write a check, you wouldn't put money in that bank. Your faith is that the bank will be solvent and will have your money when you need it. If we didn't have faith, we wouldn't do these things. If I didn't have faith, I'd have a paying job when I got to Raytown. I absolutely and assuredly guarantee you I would not drive 25 minutes in the morning to Raytown. So faith is the assurance of things hoped for. Certainly hope to find food in the icebox. Certainly hope to get paid for work. The evidence of things not seen. I have not seen those things happen yet before I do them, but my faith is the evidence that they will happen. Our faith is the evidence we need to be able to take action. So let's see here. Hebrews chapter 11 again. This time we're going to do 32 through 35. And what shall I more say? For the time would fail me to tell of Gideon and of Barak and of Samson and of Jephthah and of David also and Samuel and more of the prophets who through faith subdued kingdoms, wrought righteousness, obtained promises, stopped the mouths of lions, quenched the violence of fire, escaped the edge of the sword, out of the weakness were made strong, waxed valiant in fight, turned to flight the armies of the aliens. Women received their dead raised to life again, and others were tortured, not accepting deliverance that they might obtain the first resurrection. Would you accept torture if you didn't have faith that you would receive the first resurrection? Would you willingly go forth for Christ if you did not believe? I don't think so. I've shared this testimony before. I'd like to share it again. I've never shared it during a sermon. It was in February of this year that we had one of our two monthly movie nights, and we'd watched The Incredibles. And after we were finished watching it, Mary and Eve decided they wanted to be characters from the movie. And so Eve wanted to be Vi, and Mary wanted to be Dash. Can you guess what Dash does? Dash runs fast. Dash runs real fast. So Mary was running really fast, right up until the point where she tripped and she stumbled right in front of the corner of the wall between the kitchen and the living room. This corner here on this podium is sharp. It's made of wood and it's painted. But on your walls in your house, you have bead on drywall. Most of us do anyway. And what that bead is, that's a metal strip that's got a little, probably a 16th or an 18th of an inch round on it that you put over two pieces of drywall when they come to a 90 degree turn. And you put mud on it and you paint over it. But that metal corner, not normally sharp, when you hit something against it, it can cut you. And that's exactly what happened to Mary. Mary got a gash that was a half inch long right down the left side of her forehead. As you can imagine, it's quite alarming. I jumped up. Stacy jumped up. I grabbed Mary, put her on the kitchen, on the island, the counter in the kitchen, and Stacy took off to get the bandages. Gashes on a forehead, half inch long, they bleed pretty good. But you know what I did? I had faith. I knew without doubting that the Lord could heal her. And so I put my hands together and I held her hands, and of course she was crying. And I prayed that the Lord would stop the bleeding. Not only that the Lord would stop the bleeding, but that the Lord would heal her head. That she would be made whole, that she would have no injury to her head at all. I didn't like the blood. I really didn't like the idea of concussion. And so I prayed for whole healing. I prayed without doubting. I had no doubt. When I opened my eyes and I looked up at her forehead, in under 30 seconds I saw that wound close and heal over. She had a tiny little scab in less than 30 seconds. I ask you, how is that even possible? With a wound that should have bled for a very long time. It is possible, and it happened. And I saw it with my own eyes. But I prayed, not doubting. And my prayer was not amiss. Another testimony I'd like to share with you happened this past July. I was in Rolla for training. My employer had sent me down there for a new class they want me to teach, civil engineering and architecture. So you have to go down for 2 weeks and do this training, and it's really quite good. But my employer paid for my room down there, and they reimbursed my meals. And so I went out to eat, because what else are you going to do in a hotel room, right? On Tuesday of that week, I went to a place called Kyoto's. Kyoto's is a little Chinese-Japanese restaurant. They serve both cuisines, and I like it. It's pretty good. I've been there before. While I was sitting at the table by myself, an older couple came in and sat down at a table in front of me, and they sat across from the table like this, and I looked perpendicular to their table. I couldn't help but watch them a little bit. I tried not to. I didn't want to, you know, just stare at them. But I couldn't help but watch. And you know what the first thing I noticed was? They didn't smile at each other. Isn't that an odd thing to notice? When you see a couple, an older couple, I assume they were married at the time, and they didn't smile at each other. Anytime somebody would walk by that they thought they knew or that they did know, they'd smile and they'd say, "Oh, hey, how you doing? How are you doing? How have you been?" And as soon as that person would walk off, they'd stop smiling and look down. Not at each other even. It was crazy. I couldn't even hardly believe it. I sat there thinking, this just doesn't seem right. And then it hit me. It hit me so hard I almost started crying. The Lord just rested upon me in spirit. When I drive long distances, I like to listen to sermons in the vehicle I'm in. For this trip, I had Arthur Oakman and Evan Fry. Evan Fry's got a lot of radio sermons, and I really enjoy those. Arthur Oakman's I've started listening to, and they take me a little while to get, but I get them. In one of Oakman's sermons, he says, "One of our problems is that we keep our priesthood to ourselves." I wasn't completely sure what he meant when I heard it, and I really pondered about it because it really stuck in my head. But as I sat there, it hit me. 2 or 3 days later, I was sitting in that restaurant, and what it meant hit me. Referring to the priesthood, our offices are for the benefit of the people, not just our people, but everyone. Well, okay, I thought, I am a teacher. I don't have traveling ministry. And again, the words went through my head. We don't share our priesthood. We keep it to ourselves. I knew I needed to get up and go over and talk to those people. I was pretty nervous, and I even thought, well, I've probably already missed my opportunity because I've been sitting here thinking about this for so long, and the Lord's had to throw it into my head at least twice. After I finished eating, I did get up and I went over to talk to him. I say this, but I don't really believe it. I say, even now, I hardly believe what happened. I pulled a chair up to their table and I apologized for interrupting their meal. And I asked them how long they'd been married, and they replied, 47 years. I know we have people here that have been married longer than that, but 47 years is a pretty good pretty good little stint, I'd say. And I asked, are you guys happy? They didn't say anything. They just both kind of nodded yes. I said, I couldn't help but notice you don't smile or talk to each other. And the man said, well, when you've been married as long as we have, there's not much left to say. I knew that wasn't true. I said, when I sit across from my wife, I can't help but smile. Then I said about the strangest thing I could imagine saying. Because I don't say this kind of thing to people. But it was out of the words were out of my mouth before I even knew what was happening. I told them I was a minister in our church. That I wasn't paid for my ministry except by the Lord. And there are many here who are. And right after I said that, they started asking questions about our church. I talked about the two greatest commandments, love thy God, and the second, like unto the first, love thy neighbor as thyself. We talked for just, it was brief, but I got those first two great commandments out. I said I probably wouldn't meet them again, but that they are my neighbors and that I love them. And the man said, well, I guess we are in the age of jet travel. We all are neighbors. I excused myself and I wished them well, and I left. The man's reply basically told me that they did not know God. It was one of those neat replies, but anyone who says we are in the jet age of travel, when you talk about a neighbor, you know that either one, the person's just making light, which I suppose he could have been, or that he truly doesn't know the scriptures and he truly doesn't know God. I don't know if they go to any church, but what I do know is that they had a positive effect. I'm sorry, I know I had a positive effect on them. For what purpose the Lord had, I don't know. But I do know that it was by my faith that I was able to get up and go over and talk to them. I was prompted, and it was by faith that I acted. Matthew chapter 8. There we are. Verses 5 through 10. And when Jesus was entered into Capernaum, there came unto him a centurion, beseeching him and saying, Lord, my servant lieth at home sick of the palsy, grievously tormented. And Jesus said unto him, I will come and heal him. The centurion answered and said, Lord, I am not worthy that thou shouldest come under my roof, but speak the word only, and my servant shall be healed. For I am a man under authority, having soldiers under me, and I say to this man, go, and he goeth, and to another, come, and he cometh, and to my servant, do this, and he doeth it. And when they that followed him heard this, they marveled. And when Jesus heard this, he said unto them that followed, verily I say unto you, I have not found so great faith, no, not in all of Israel. Not in all Israel has he found faith that great. And here's a man who I do not know, but I would guess most likely did not go and witness sermons from Christ. So how do we get great faith like the centurion in Matthew chapter 8? We talked about what faith is, covered it, I think, fairly well. But before we can get great faith, don't we have to get faith, period? According to the third lecture of faith, We must have a correct idea of God's character, perfections, and attributes. Have you ever heard of the phrase misplaced faith? Misplaced faith. As I say that and I listen to it, it makes me think maybe something I had faith in that I shouldn't have had faith in. So let's think of an example. If I, as a teacher, ordained teacher, in the Lord's church, get up and go out to do an administration, what do you think is going to happen? Anything? Probably not. That's not my authority. That's the authority given to an elder. So, what can you think of possibly would cause me to get up and do something like that? Well, I think the lectures in faith explain it, spell it out pretty well. It would have to be my faith. But it wouldn't be a good faith, because if it didn't work, and I can pretty much guarantee it wouldn't, pretty soon I would start to question my faith. I wouldn't have that evidence of the things hoped for. Because after I got there and tried to perform an administration, it wouldn't work. I seriously doubt the Lord's Spirit would bless anybody in that scenario. So now I've got a real problem. I've got misplaced faith. It doesn't only affect what I tried to do, it's probably going to permeate into the rest of my faith. So if I really felt like God had told me to do that, which He hasn't, but let's say He did, or I thought He did, then I'm going to say anything else that God tells me doesn't make sense either, because I probably get to the point I don't even think God listens. I get to whole kind of crazy conclusions. But why? I'll tell you why. Because I had a misplaced faith. If you study the scriptures, it would be hard to believe that God would lie or that He would contradict Himself. Malachi 3:6 states, "For I am the Lord, I change not." Okay? But I still didn't quite hit on how do we get faith to begin with. That's probably because I skipped a part in my sermon here on my paper. It happens from time to time. So let's go back. I'm going to read Romans 10, 13 through 15. "For whosoever shall call upon the name of the Lord shall be saved. How then shall they call on Him in whom they have not believed? And how shall they believe in Him of whom they have not heard? And how shall they hear without a preacher? And how shall they preach except they be sent? As it is written, how beautiful are the feet of them that preach the gospel of peace and bring glad tidings of good things." To first have faith, we must hear the word. And remember, the word is the gospel. When you first hear the word, do you have perfect faith? How can we? We don't know the character, the attributes of God. How can we know the Lord's will if we don't know the scriptures? It makes no sense to me. So when you look at the centurion from chapter 8, and you say, how did he have great faith? I'm going to tell you it was probably through desperation for help for a servant of his. He knew no other way. Yet he had heard the word, or at least a portion of it, that told him Jesus can heal this man. I suppose through desperation it wouldn't be so bad. But I think for us, I think we have the opportunity to hear more of the gospel, and we don't want to act out of desperation. Surely there are times that we want to call on Christ in hours of need. But we need to know more. And we have the scriptures. So when you go on to misplaced faith, things you thought you knew obviously were not true, think about the elect who are to be deceived. Do we know of elect that have been deceived throughout the time? I'm sure we do. They were deceived because they did not know the Scriptures. They were deceived because they chose to follow a path that the Lord had not set. Romans chapter 4, verse 3. For what saith the Scriptures? Abraham believed God, and it was counted unto him for righteousness. Do you think Abraham was reading Scriptures, or do you think he was listening to God? I think he's probably listening to God, but we have that in Scripture now. Here's one from the Book of Mormon, Jacob 3:7. Wherefore we search the prophets, and we have many revelations, and the spirit of prophecy, and having all these witnesses, we obtain a hope, and our faith becometh unshaken, insomuch that we truly can command in the name of Jesus, and the very trees obey us, or the mountains, or the waves of the sea. That's pretty powerful. What about Ether, chapter 5, verses 30 and 31? And I, Moroni, having heard these words, was comforted and said, O Lord, thy righteous will be done. For I know that thou workest unto the children of men according to their faith. For the brother of Jared said unto the mountain Zerim, remove, and it was removed. And if he had not had faith, it would not have moved. Wherefore thou workest after men have faith. For thus did thou manifest thyself unto thy disciples. Do you think it would take great faith to move a mountain? Do you think that we can go out and command the stormy sea to be calm? Just said we could. Do you think we could do it for any whim of our own? I would argue no, we cannot. We must ask not amiss. To ask amiss would be to have misplaced faith. You're asking for something the Lord doesn't think ought to be done. It's the Lord's will we're after here, not our own. So how do you get great faith? Study the Scriptures. But there's more. Not just study the Scriptures. Study the Scriptures and take action. There are so many people who do not know the Word. I am continually surprised, but I shouldn't be. They may think they know it, but how can they truly know the Word if they don't act on the Word in the Lord's will? 2007, when I was converted into the church, the Lord hit me over the head, brought me in very well. I'm very pleased to be here, but I got to tell you, before I came in, I thought I knew what was in the Old and New Testament. Never picked up a Book of Mormon. Never heard of a Doctrine and Covenants. But I thought I knew what was in the Scriptures. I'm going to tell you, when I started reading that fall of 2007, I found out very quickly I had no idea what was in the Scriptures. I had no idea. Doctrine and Covenants 85:18, and if your eye be single to my glory, your whole body shall be filled with light, and there shall be no darkness in you, and that body which is filled with light comprehendeth all things. Therefore sanctify yourselves, that your minds become single to God. And the days will come that you shall see him, for he will unveil his face unto you, and it shall be in his own time, in his own way, and according to his own will. There's that Lord's will again. So how do we get great faith? First, we've got to hear the gospel. Second, we've got to study the gospel. We've got to study our scriptures. And we've got to take faith to exercise our belief in what the Lord's will is. And will we trip? Most of us probably will. I know I do. But I have enough faith that I can admit, hey, okay, I made a mistake. Let's find out why. What did I not understand that was in the scriptures that I should have understood? And I go reading. How wonderful would it be to hear the Lord say, as he did in Matthew chapter 25, verse 21, "Well done, good and faithful servant.